Actually, we were discussing Ratna Sutta for several weeks. We have discussed that and we completed that. And now I am going to start another sutta also from the same Sutta Nipata. And this sutta is named as Moral Shame or Hiri Sutta. So as you know, Hiri and Ottappa, moral shame and moral dread or moral fear, are two qualities that Buddha highlights. And interestingly, when one develops mindfulness, so this is something Buddha say typically comes out. Say, for example, we were not mindful when we were killing, for example. And sometimes probably we are lying. We are using some harsh words. And sometimes even cheating, stealing. Probably likewise, we might have engaged with various unwholesome activities, but now suppose you are start developing mindfulness, and as a result of that, slowly, slowly, you gain some wakefulness. You are now aware of what's going on, and you are somewhat aware of the bodily activities, certain mental activities, what various emotions are available, and what various thoughts are available, feelings are available. So likewise, we get some amount of self-awareness. So when that self-awareness is available, one interesting aspect is the arising of moral shame and moral fear. This interestingly explained in the Satisampajanya Sutta. So when Satisampajanya is available, mindfulness and clear comprehension is available, one of the important result of that is the availability of Hiri Anyottappa, that is the moral shame and moral fear. So that indicates the importance of moral shame and moral fear. That sometimes we are shameful for something unsuitable, but here what we are talking is, we are shameful of doing something wrong, which could be harmful to us, which would be harmful to others. And as a result of that, we are ashamed of doing that. Similarly, something could be giving some bad results. So we have some kind of a fear of involving in that, engaging in that activity, because we know the repercussions, consequences. So this moral fear and moral dread is one of the outcomes when one develops mindfulness and clear comprehension. So not only mindfulness, you need clear comprehension as well. So when both are combined together, in general, we can call it as sati and panya, that is the mindfulness and the wisdom. So when these two are working together, so always have a kind of an effect on ourselves. So it now takes care of what we are doing. When we happen to do any kind of unwholesome deed, so immediately our mind interrupts, very much like a kind of a self-monitoring process is going on, a kind of a self-management is happening. So it is very much not approving if we are trying to do something unwholesome. And if we are continuing something wholesome, so maybe that approval is available, so we can continue our task. So that reflective ability, that monitoring ability is available in the mind. So that is one of the outcome of the development of mindfulness. Actually, in this sutta, it is not only that the mindfulness is highlighted, rather it talks about various other things, including the value of good association. So in the spiritual side, spiritual path, we need some good friends, Kalyana Mittas. And sometimes it is not easy to understand the Kalyana Mittas. And here, this sutta starts talking about certain possibility of understanding a bad person. So one interesting point in a bad person or bad friend is that he is not appreciating the moral shame. He doesn't have any shame on doing something wrong. He can lie, he can kill, or he can steal, he can cheat, engage with something wrong or something, say, sexual misconduct. There's no any moral shame in doing that in this particular person. So if someone doesn't have moral shame, so there Buddha say, so he should not be associated. One should understand he is not a good friend. So the verse is going like this. Hiring tarantang vijiguchamanang sakha hamasmi iti bhasamanang. Seihani kammani anadayantang neso mamanti iti mang vijanya. So sometimes people simply neglect the moral shame and they sometimes even look down it and still they say that I am a good friend of you and they like our association, but they don't follow what they say and they ignore that moral shame and they engage with wrong deeds, and therefore Buddha say, for us, he's not my friend. So basically, when we are engaging with the spiritual path, so association is one important thing. If we associate someone who is immoral or who has no care of moral shame or moral dread, so that is somewhere that we need to be careful, because we know that he's not careful about that. He doesn't have any moral shame. In the other sense, we can say he doesn't practice mindfulness and clear comprehension. So we have to be careful when we are associating such people, because their motives are quite different. So then it is mentioned, Ananvayang piyang vachang yo mittesu pakubbati akarantang bhasamanam parijanati pandita. So actually sometimes this particular person is mentioned as Vachi Paraman. He only talks. He only talks beautifully. He only say that I am going to do something. I am going to help you. I will be your savior. I will be always there for you. So likewise, various beautiful words are there. But he or she himself is not following that what he or she is telling. And as a result of that, the wise person understand he's a Vachi Param. He's a bad friend. He's not someone that we can trust. He only has the lip words, lip service. Other than that, he's not true to the point. He's not trustworthy. And he's not a kind of helpful friend. Naso mitto yo sada appamatto Bheda Sankhi Randa Vanu Passi Yasmincha Seti Urasiva Putto Save Mitto Yo Parehi Abhijyo. So now Buddha talks about the good friend as well. A person who is suspecting and always trying to find fault in us, so he is not a good friend. But on the other hand, if we can trust a person, we actually very much like Buddha give a very beautiful simile here, that we like lying down on our father's chest, that we know that he protects us. We know that he gives us the warmth. We know that he's our hero, something like that. Because we have that parental love and they provide that happiness, they provide that safety. And such kind of a warmth, such kind of a possibility to depend on. If we have such kind of a attitude towards a person, and we actually have that trust, and we have gone through various problems, and this person we trust and we understand, so this is the behavior that he is showing, he is protecting me, always there for me, and he's a good person, he's a good friend. So there are few good friends actually mentioned in the Dhamma. Basically, four good friends are mentioned. Upakaraka Mitto. So he is a helpful friend. So if we are in need of money, so if we approach him and he know that he is in a bad situation, maybe in an economic crisis in today's terms, so probably, so this friend is there for us. If he has money, he will try his best. He will do his best. And suppose that we go through some illness. And this friend is always there for us. And he gives us medicine or whatever the need, taking care of us. So, upakaraka mitta, helpful friend. And sometimes assume that we went through a trouble. We are being caught by someone. So there also he is trying to protect us, safeguard us. So if someone is talking ill of us, then he is trying to protect us. So likewise, he is always a helpful friend. Upakaraka mitta. And another friend is there who is called Samana Sukha Dukha Mitta. That he shares all his secrets with us. And if we share any secrets with him, and he actually protects it. He never exposed that to others. So we can fully depend on him. And whatever he go through happiness, he reveal us. And if we go through some unhappiness, sorrowful situation, he share that sorrow with us. So likewise, always with us. Always ready to go through the happiness and unhappiness. Whenever we are going through these ups and downs in life, vicissitudes of the life. So this person is there for us. And he is actually a trustworthy person. And there's another person mentioned. He's called Anukampako Mitto. And he's actually a sympathetic friend. Maybe he's in a higher position than us. Maybe more educated or more wealthy or in a good position at a higher rank or spiritually more developed. So likewise, probably he may be in a much better position, but he always have kind of a sympathetic attitude towards us. It is not that he is trying to misuse us or trying to uplift his morale by making use of us, but rather have that proper attitude. Probably he understand how he developed to his level, and so he is trying to guide us, giving us encouragement. If we are fallen, he always have the helping hand. So that Anukampaka Mitta. So sometimes it is difficult to understand. Sometimes we feel that a certain person is a little sympathetic towards us. But sometimes he may be doing it with a ulterior motive. But here it is not like that. So this particular person is genuine. He genuinely have kind of a sympathetic attitude. He genuinely wants us to develop. He genuinely wants us to get rid of the suffering or whatever the problem that we are encountered. So that kind of a helping hand is available with him. And another one is called Attakkai Mitto. So he always want us to be in the good side. Always show us the proper path. So this is more very much into spiritual side also, where he knows what is proper, what is important, what is more beneficial, valuable. So he always encourages us also to be in that proper side, gives us the directions, and encourages us in that proper path. And he always see the growth in us. He always like to see the growth in us. It is not that he is expecting any kind of material benefit or any kind of reputation or any kind of material benefit. Rather, he has his own inner vision, so that he understands of the value of maybe his this life or the value of the teaching or say whatever the practice. So he encourages others also to walk in the same path. So he likes others also to have their benefits. What we call as the Attakkai Mitto. So these four friends mentioned in the Dhamma as the good friends. So they have these qualities. And on the other hand, the bad friends are also mentioned. And one is called Anya Dattu Haru. So that is a friend that always associates us in order to take something from us. And not that he is ready to share anything. Rather, if he want to share, he may share only a little, but always want to gain or get something more than what he contributes. So he's an opportunist. So he associates us, but always asking something more. Always trying to get some benefit from us. He's making use of us. He's using us. So this is Anyadattu Haro. He's always using us to get some benefit. And another one is the Vachi Paramo, what we have just discussed in the Hiritsutta. Vachi Parama. He only has the lip service. Basically, he talks maybe beautiful words, some appreciative words, keeping us on the top, and always telling that if we are in need, that if you come on yesterday, I would have given it to you, but unfortunately I have given it to someone else. So always he is ready to help only by words, but never by actions. So these are also not difficult to find out, that there are people who are talking loudly, talking with a pleasant smile, but whenever we are in real need, they are not really act according to what they say. They use some other words and they somehow escape, not giving us any helping hand. Another one is called Anupya Bhani. If we do something good, he prays on that. And if we do something bad, again he prays on that. He's not a good friend. So we need to understand that good friends are not someone that always approves what we do. A good friend, if we do something wrong, he may even blame us. He may even shout us. Because he understands what is proper and what is improper. But the Anupya Bhani person is someone he always actually take our side. Either we do good or either we do bad. Even if we do something bad, he approves it. Another important thing is, when we are not available, he may even sort of talk ill of us. It is not that he approves everything and always with us. Rather, when we are not available, he even disapproves us, or he even talk ill of us rather than protecting us. So he is called Anupya Bahani. The last one is called Apaya Sahaya. So basically, he gives us wrong directions. Probably he himself is going in the wrong direction, and he takes us also in the wrong direction. Go to the Apaya. Go to the hell. So basically, ruins what we have. Suppose that we are well educated and he is trying to take us to a bar, take us to an alcoholic, to make us an alcoholic. And if you are not addicted to anything, so he is trying to take us towards kind of a wrong addiction. So if we are maintaining kind of some ethical behavior, he is trying to destroy that. He is inviting us to some wrong places. If we are trying to maintain some morality, he disapproves that. He wants to break us the precepts. So likewise, he is completely against the Dhamma, completely against the ethics, and he is always pulling us towards the wrong side. So we can see that different people are available in the society. It is quite difficult to understand who is actually the true friend, who is actually trying to help us, who would be there for us when we are in trouble, and who are the ones who simply talks but never act accordingly. So likewise, these are some good guiding principles, guidelines for us to understand who is a good friend and who is not a good friend. And this sutta actually is a short sutta in the Sutta Nipata, and it has two more verses. පමුජ්ජ කරණං තානං පසංසාව හානං සුඛං පලානි සංසෝ භවේති වහන්තෝ පෝරිසං දුරං පවිවේක රසං පිත්වා රසං උපසමේ උපසමස්සච නිද්දරෝ හෝති නිප්පපාපු ධම්ම පීත රසං පිවන්ති. Now actually talks about the good side. So when one develops happiness, so basically one is concerned about one's duty and continuing in one's proper path and joyful in one's life and actually has the taste of the Dhamma. He has tasted the taste of the Dhamma. It's not that he is happy just because of the sensual indulgence, sensual sort of engagements, but rather here it is a kind of an unworldly kind of happiness, niramisa piti. So because he has tasted the Dhamma, having drunk the taste of solitude, so he even prefers the solitude. Doesn't mean that he has some dislike towards others or he is incapable of being with others. Rather, time to time he prefers to be in solitude for his own happiness. Being alone but not feeling lonely. That's a very interesting statement I have seen somewhere. He liked to be alone but not feeling lonely. He enjoys the solitude. And he enjoys the tranquility and the inner peace. Niddaro hoti nippapu. So basically he avoids all the evil, doesn't have any evil, and no stress or distress. Dhamma piti rasang pivanti. Now that is something very interesting. The taste of rapture in the Dhamma, drinking the taste of rapture in the Dhamma. So sometimes Buddha mentioned, so this Dhamma piti, the rapture when one is engaged in the Dhamma is something one can recognize. So when, say for example, when you are meditating, sometimes you may feel happy, joyful, and sometimes when you are listening to certain Dhamma sermon, you feel happy, quite elated or quite uplifted. Sometimes when you are reflecting on Dhamma, you may feel uplifted. You have immense amount of gratitude towards the Buddha. So likewise, we get sometimes uplifted when we hear the true Dhamma and we contemplate the true Dhamma and we are experiencing the same Dhamma. So likewise, the Dhamma has a very beautiful quality which is giving us an unworldly kind of happiness, niramisa piti. So sometimes this is highlighted in the suttas. So Buddha is inviting us to drink that happiness. Happiness of the Dhamma. Because it is harmless and it is beneficial. It gives us a different perspective to our life. Rather than always trying to be engaged with some sensual activity to have some happiness or the continuing or following the pleasure principle. So if one has some kind of a different approach, he's ready to explore the Dhamma, find happiness in reading the Dhamma books, find happiness in contemplating the Dhamma, find happiness in practicing the Dhamma. So this is something that we need to grow. So if we don't yet find happiness in the Dhamma, so probably we can explore how we can be happy in Dhamma. And on the other hand, more and more we experience it. So that indicates that we are not superficially touching the Dhamma, rather we are now fairly connected with the Dhamma, wholeheartedly connected with the Dhamma. It is not outside now. Now Dhamma is very much like inculcated within us. So the heart is filled with Dhamma. Sometimes Buddha mentioned that the certain monks, arahants, are like they are like his own or as a putta. So he is born out of them. They are the dhammaja. So they are built with dhamma or they are born with dhamma. So very much like Buddha finds out the truth and he explains the truth. And if we can be happy about that truth, if we, while we are thinking about it, while we are learning it, while we are practicing it, if we can maintain some kind of a joy, happiness, that's an extremely harmless happiness, an extremely beneficial happiness that we are going through. And Buddha even encouraged that to have. It doesn't mean that we are always only thinking and thinking only about the Dhamma, but we need to live according to Dhamma. We need to practice the Dhamma so that the Dhamma become very much established in ourselves. It is not outside now. So we represent the Dhamma. We have become Dhamma very much like. So that actually ends this sutta. It's a short one, but in a way pointing out some interesting points and highlights the value of the Kalyanamittas. And on the other hand, points out the value of the moral shame. Because sometimes we ignore these qualities, thinking about some very intellectual abilities, some say sound wisdom, etc. But moral shame and moral dread is something very fundamental that we need to have. So that's why in certain suttas like Satisampajanya Sutta, after one establish in mindfulness and develop fair amount of clear comprehension, this hiri moral shame and ottapa moral dread is something develops as an outcome of that mindfulness and clear comprehension. So that means if one is developing mindfulness and clear comprehension, he can't engage with wrong activities, he can't engage with wrong speech, because moral shame is there, moral dread is there. So that is always trying to protect him. So they have become the Lokapalaka Dhamma. So they are the ones governing the whole world. Hiri and Ottappa, moral shame and moral dread. But if we neglect the Dhamma, we are completely ignorant about the Dhamma. So then we don't have any moral shame, don't have any moral dread. So one can engage with all the unnecessary, unwholesome activities without caring of anything. They can even kill, steal, lie, use intoxicants and all the unwholesome deeds he can continue because he doesn't have any moral shame. He doesn't have any moral dread. So he ruins himself and he even ruins the others as well. But on the other hand, if one is so concerned about moral shame and moral dread, so he is careful of what he do. And he is careful of any influence that he is making on the others, because he is a responsible person. Okay, with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Asarai Bhante, Sarvan. Yes. We have 6 questions today.
Right.
Yeah. So first one is mindful sitting. Venerable Bhante, this reflection is regarding my sitting practice. When I start, I scan the body and make sure that I am aware of the body sensations to confirm that I am in the present moment. Afterwards, I try to observe various sensations in the upper body. Then I observe the breath and the differences between in-breath and out-breath and many sensations around the nostrils. After about 5 to 10 minutes of continuous application of this technique, the breath starts to become subtle and fade away. My mind distracts, but I could bring it back by becoming aware of the sensations that I am used to. Once the breath fades away, I enter a relaxed state like a space and stays for 5 to 10 minutes. Then this widespread awareness slowly comes together to my sitting posture. It is very gradual process and I observe the space that I am in when the breath fades away, shrinking and concentrates towards my body as something coming back to the body. The awareness comes inside the body deeper and deeper and concentrates around the sensations of my sitting posture, mainly the pressure on my back from the floor. During this time, various thoughts come and go, but my focus is mainly on the body posture. Since this is happening over a period of time in sitting sensations, thought of getting your guidance. Much merits for your service with metta. That's the end of the question.
Chamila, could you repeat the first part of the question?
When I start, I scan the body and make sure that I'm aware of the body sensations to confirm that I'm in the present moment. Afterwards, I try to observe various sensations in the upper body. Then I observe the breath and the differences between in-breath and out-breath and many sensations around the nostrils. After about 5 to 10 minutes of continuous application of this technique, the breath starts to become subtle and fade away. My mind distracts, but I could bring it back by becoming aware of the sensations that I'm used to. Once the breath fades away, I enter a relaxed state like a space and stays for 5 to 10 minutes. Then this widespread awareness slowly comes together to my sitting posture.
Okay, I think, yeah. So basically, this is all right. So basically, you can be aware of sensations at one time and carefully investigate them and try to develop wisdom. And sometimes you can take yourself a little back and see the sensations as a whole and, you know, very much like a bird's eye view. That is also possible, kind of a meta-awareness. So both are time to time happening, it seems like from your report. So you are doing well, you are recognizing various sensations and you can keep your attention one after the other and observe them carefully. At that time, I mean, if you clearly mention that the sensation fades away, that can be understood, but the breath fades away and you get distracted, a little bit confusing there. But typically the approach is, say you develop some amount of mindfulness using breathing, we are refining the mindfulness and sharpen your, say, the one-pointedness. And now you start observing various sensations. And one after the other, you can go through this whole process. Now you don't need to return back to breath, because if you are able to retain the mindfulness and clear comprehension or the investigative ability, in case you lose your mindfulness, in case mind get distracted, probably you can spend some little time in the breathing process so that again you resharpen your mindfulness, regain your investigative quality, and again start the process. So likewise, if you are able to maintain more time in the investigation with a balanced mind, so that's the approach that we need to follow. And while we are engaged with that, certain sensations of course can be disappeared. And they can appear at another, or it's not that they themselves appear, and other places sensations are available, and then you are able to observe them. And there is a possibility, as you continue this process, so mind very much like disengage with this whole process and just maintain a kind of a relaxed, detached kind of a attitude. So that is also possible. So probably mind is now little preparing for that. You are continuing a process, continuing practice for some time, and now mind sometimes disengage from this observation and tries to maintain a kind of a solitude, maintain kind of a relaxed attitude. They are there, but mind is not that interested in continuing with the process. Rather, it prefers to be alone. It prefers to have a rest. It prefers to be free. So these are the possibilities available. Probably actually, as an advice, I can say you can continue the process and see what's happening. There is nothing goes wrong. So the things are happening. You are doing well. You are in the correct path. And you can continue and see what are the attitude now we are getting. Are you feeling more comfortable? Are you feeling distracted? Are you feeling confident? Are you feeling little sort of attitude-wise, say you prefer to be alone now? So if you prefer to be alone, if you have a little dispassionate attitude, so that means the path is continuing. We are in the correct path. Okay.
Question number 2 of 6 is walking practice. Dear Bhante, I observe the sensations of the lower body and especially the soles during the walking practice. I can keep the attention throughout 10 to 15 rounds of 25-step walking path. I can initially distinguish left and right sensations in the soles, which fade away after about 10 to 15 minutes. My mind settles quickly during the walking practice. When everything settles, I can feel the sensations, but I cannot name which leg or what that is. As per Bhante's guidance, at this stage, I simply observe the starting and ending of these blurred sensations and try to stay on this calm state. If there's anything further I should do, appreciate Bhante's advice. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, you have to come to this range again and again, as we just discussed in the previous question. So this is a kind of a region that we are coming. So sensations are available, but they have become blurred. We can't distinguish them. So previously we are able to recognize one after the other, or we can recognize their full detail. But now details are not evident. So they all very much like mixed and blurred. So it's a matter of simply maintaining this state for a while. So very much like this is what we call as a dispassion. So now mind is not interested at looking at it, because it's very much like a flux. It's a kind of a mixture, not easy to recognize the pattern. So not easy to recognize individually. So everything appear like a flux. So it's a matter of continuing this process, and more the mind may arrive this state, and you just be and allow the mind to maintain a kind of a dispassionate, equanimous attitude towards this process. And further we continue, the mind may sort of disengage from all these different things, all these sankharas, and probably mind get released. So that is also possible. But the symptoms what we have explained is quite positive, mm-hmm. positive in the sense in the correct path. So you may continue the practice.
Question number 3 of 6 is a general question. Dear Bhante, how do you practice mindfulness using different postures? Example, if I'm leaning down, I can be aware of the pressure points and also can observe some imaginary shape of the body. Am I correct if I try to observe these pressure points constantly, bringing my mind back to them again and again? Much merits if Bhante can explain how one can use the various postures in mindfulness training. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, postures are part of the mindfulness practice. You know that the Iriyapata Pabba, Buddha explained the main 4 postures, standing, lying down, sitting, and walking. But other than that, there are other subtle postures or intermittent postures that we go through. That is also something that we can be aware of. So the idea is gaining our attention back to the body. Again and again, establishing mindfulness. Again and again, feeling what we can feel or what we can sense. Say when we are sitting, how the buttocks may feel the pressure, how our head and neck is set up, how our hands are kept, how the body feels. So it's a very much like being familiar with this sitting posture, paying little attention to the sitting posture. So similarly with the other postures as well, as you simply mentioned, if you are leaning or lying down, so you can recognize it. It is not, by the way, that we are trying to create a mental image. Rather, we are trying to recognize the sensations happening right now within the body. We don't need to create any mental image. That is something wrong. That is not necessary. But whenever we are recognizing various sensations available at that moment, so that means we are fully aware what is happening right now. Probably you can have a little faded or a little blurred kind of a figure in the mind that this is how the body is lying down now. But that actually will disappear as we continue the practice, especially when we continue the elements meditation. So this whole body may even disappear, may even very much like fall into pieces. so that we can't have kind of a imaginary shape of the body, and it is not necessary. What is important is that we can recognize various sensations are happening and at various postures. Irrespective of the posture, sensations are there. So actually the practice, the posture practice can even take us to the anyone's meditation. Or on the other hand, we can recognize, okay, when we are changing the postures, the previous posture has finished. Say, for example, while you are standing, so you have the standing posture. Now you are sitting, now you have the sitting posture. Now the standing posture has disappeared. It has in that sense a kind of arising and passing away, but in a more gross level. So standing posture was there, but it has disappeared now. Suppose now you are lying down, right? That means the sitting posture also has terminated, ceased. Now we are in the lying down posture. So likewise, in the posture level, we can recognize how it is evolving. But more than that, actually that is not enough. More than that, actually, while we are keeping our attention within the posture, all other subtle sensations are also evident. Then we can start anyone's meditation. Back to you, Chamila.
Question number 4 or 6 is mindful sitting. Dear Venerable, when I do Anapanasati meditation, I do not feel anything after a few minutes. I get bored and blank. No thoughts or feelings. It lasts for some time. Please advise how to proceed. Thank you with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, I need a little bit more information about this question because when you are practicing Anapanasati, you can encounter this situation probably at the early stages as well. Say your breath disappears and mind stops talking and mind is also calm and no thoughts, very much like the breath has calmed down. And at that moment, we simply have to continue so that the breath may be evident or breath may appear and we can recognize its sensations. And on the other hand, sometimes we get various thoughts, we get distracted. So that is also something we need to handle. And sometimes various rapturous sensations can happen. We may feel happy, we may feel comfortable, we may feel like floating. Various blissful states can happen. So that is also possible. So likewise, many possibilities are there. And on the other hand, if you are practicing Anapanasati for years and you have gone through it for a considerable period of time and you did it wholeheartedly, continuously, with some dedication, and there is a state that you come across where no thoughts are available, and immediately after some time, say, the breathing disappear and the mind become blank, no thoughts even. So at that moment, you don't have to do anything, just be. And now actually you don't need to even practice Anapanasati, you can directly look at the mind and allow various thoughts to happen and you allow them to go. And as a result of that, you may very much like recognize the emptiness in the mind and just dwell in that emptiness without associating anything in the mind. So I just given the answer for both situations, both cases, and check whether you are in the first stage or in the second stage. Accordingly, you can get the answer.
If that person who put that question is in the in the program today, maybe they can raise hand and we can raise the question. We have 2 more questions, so in the meantime, we'll go through them.
Yeah.
So question number 5 of 6, it's from the Dhamma Sermon. Dear Bhante, what is samsara beer? And is there a link between this and Hiriyotap with metta? That's the end of the question.
No, we can think of a link actually. Samsara beer, samsara buyer is very much like that we are in an endless cycle, again and again coming to the mother's womb and again reborn and again going to the hell realms and going through suffering, old age sickness, suffering, old age sickness, suffering. So this kind of endless suffering that we are going through is something that we can be afraid of. it can develop some kind of an urgency to the practice, because we know as Buddhists that this is not our final birth and this is not our first birth either. So we have come across series of incountable, uncountable number of lifetimes, and now this is another instance that we are going through, and we don't know how many further we have to go through. So if we are not engaged with the proper practice, and ultimately we need to understand this kind of suffering that we are going through. So understanding this sansaric fear is something important, so that it will encourage us to practice, understand the Buddha's teaching. And on the other hand, the moral shame or moral dread have little connection, but not direct connection. The moral dread and moral shame is actually when we have to do something unwholesome. So immediately this moral shame and moral dread have to appear, or have to sort of indicate in the mind, so that it will prevent us continuing that wrong activity. So if that moral shame and moral dread is not available, so we continue the wrong activity. Suppose, for example, we come across a serpent and we feel that it may bite us, so I want to kill it. So in a way, there's a fear available, fear to the snake, but that is not the moral fear. So that is a fear that come across because of the snake bite. But the moral fear is something different, where we are fearful of the disadvantages, we are fearful of the outcome, we are fearful of the consequences of a killing. Suppose that we kill this animal, and the future results, future consequences that we may have to go through because of killing. So that is something engaged, that is something indicated in the mind as the moral dread. So we may have to go through suffering, and we may also have to go through the kind of harm that we did to that animal. So likewise, we are little connected to the karma and have kind of a moral dread. So that is the moral dread, just little, that is different actually. Yeah.
Question number 6 of 6. This is also again a Dhamma Sermon question. Dear Bhante, regarding Dhamma rupture Bhante mentioned today, is it something similar to the rupture we experience during practice that can be felt as a body sensation? That's the end of the question.
That is also possible. Actually, sometimes assume that you are listening to a Dhamma Sermon. So when you are listening to a Dhamma Sermon, if you are wholeheartedly listening to that with full attention, sometimes you get connected with the Dhamma, and what you are experiencing and what is explained in the Dhamma has become very much like aligned. At that time, you get a very beautiful connectivity, a very beautiful, being one with the Dhamma. It is not something different from you, or it is not far away from you, and you are fully connected with the Dhamma. And that is another area that we can say that you have the Dhamma Piti. Dhamma Piti, the kind of a rupture that is aroused through the Dhamma. And on the other hand, I mean, even though you can't yourself even experience that, I mean, the great results, even ourselves can't experience, but if we can see the proper path, where it brings us. Say, for example, when someone is explaining, okay, these are the results, these are the benefits. And then we can actually extend our understanding to that and understand, okay, this kind of benefits are there. What a kind of a path that Buddha has revealed. So likewise, again, a kind of Dhamma Piti can happen. Appreciative joy can happen with respect to Dhamma. So I think it is not that we can narrow down only to one area, but there are different occasions, different instances it can happen at many areas, at many different levels it can happen. So at the level of the Saddha, for example, so you have immense Saddha, faith on the Buddha, and sometimes even tears come to your mind, how he go through the path, how he reveal the Dhamma, how he preaches the Dhamma, how he help others. And so likewise, a kind of a connection comes. So that actually has the faith, and sometimes we attribute it to the Buddha. But to his teaching also we can have that. So that's why, say, for example, we are, as a practice, we can do the reflections on the Dhamma, what we call as a Dhamma Anusati. Not Dhamma Anupassana, but Dhamma Anusati. So we reflect the qualities of the Dhamma. That is also a kind of way of generating kind of happiness, joy within us. When we understand the nature, we understand the value, the importance, the truth about the Dhamma.
We have come to the end of the written questions. So we have a little bit more time. Is it okay to open it to the forum?
Yeah, sure. Yes, yes.
If there's anyone who has any other questions, you can raise hand and we can unmute you to ask the question directly from Bhante. Samantha, I can unmute you now. Yes, you can.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Bhante. I have a big problem in the house, and it seems that we have a problem of mice coming. And it's because of this, I feel sorry for the mice. And at the same time, I'm catching the mice. Some have been killed. And now I've called the council to sort it out because it was really upsetting me. And especially with the Dhamma, I'm killing these animals. And at the same time, mice is a big issue, you know, because it can multiply and they can cause diseases and in the house. And I don't know how to get rid of them because they're very sharp. They're very clever as well. And they don't, even if you put a trap, they know it's a trap. They'll just eat the food. Even sometimes they eat the poison and then just go away. So I don't know, Bhante, what to do. What advice would Bhante do to get rid of them?
Actually putting them poison or killing them is actually not acceptable. But if we can put a trap and then take them out, would be a possibility available. So there may be a trap available without much making them harm. So because we can't approve killing anyway.
Yes. The ones that I have killed, so would I, or shall I just forget them? What's actually happened?
Basically, I mean, no point of regretting about it. Now things have happened, but you need to be, me all need to be careful because, I mean, they also have the right to live and, so they simply make a little, say, noise or little smell or they little ruin the place. But we killing them is not acceptable, not according to Dhamma. But taking them out without killing them would be the possibility available. Yeah, be careful. I mean, because we need to be a little concerned about their lives as well.
Yes, Bhante. Thank you, Bhante.
Hiranti, I think you can unmute now and ask your question.
Thank you, Bhante, Therwan Sarnai. I just want to ask you, I have been meditating for some time, but now when I'm doing Anapanasati, I've come to a point where I don't move further. If you see, I get stuck really, and it doesn't seem to go anywhere. What shall I do really? I do the walking and I do loving kindness and then sit meditation.
Yeah, while walking, what you do? While walking, can you explain a little bit about your walking practice?
I find a suitable area and then walk from one end to another, and being aware of my right foot and the left foot and the feelings, and being aware of what goes on the sounds and anything. So quite in a, I feel peaceful. Once I am very peaceful and I feel that I'm able to sit down, I do sometimes loving kindness or Uddhanasati, and then sit down to do breathing. The breathing is going okay, inhaling and exhaling, but get to a point where I'm stuck there. Mm-hmm. Like my mind doesn't move anywhere to any thoughts or anything either.
Right. So one thing is that one area that we need to develop is the clear comprehension part. So when the mindfulness is available, we rather than stopping there, we need to start a purposeful investigation. But we need to initiate that process in the mind. Say, for example, while walking, if you are able to walk mindfully, say from this end to the other end, there are no distractions. Again and again, you can recognize various sensations in the foot, in the soles. Now try to investigate those phenomena. This is very important. Otherwise, we are very much like stopping at the mindfulness level. So when mindfulness is established, we need to initiate that the second process, that is to see the details. So what are the characteristics available? So what are the sensations available? I mean, currently we probably understand the hardness of the flow or of the feeling, but that is not enough. We need to recognize whether there is softness available, whether there is smoothness available, whether there is roughness available, whether there is heaviness available, lightness available, heat available, cold available. So likewise, we are trying to little arouse the investigative quality of the mind by giving this exercise. And one possibility is when you are developing that capacity, probably once you sit also, you can recognize the breathing as a process, and you can recognize the subtle aspects of the breathing as well. Because now we have initiated recognizing those subtle aspects, and probably you can extend that same process while sitting. So the in-breath and out-breath is not 100% similar. So in-breath may be just giving an indication, maybe cool, and out-breath may be warm. In-breath may happen in one nostril, out-breath may happen another nostril. In-breath may touch at one point, out-breath may touch at a different point. So likewise, some subtle differences could be there. So if we initiate this investigative quality, then actually we are able to come out from that lethargic or kind of stuck kind of situation, because that stuck kind of situation can happen because we haven't initiated that investigative quality, ability of the mind.
So you need, I need to initiate it. Just
yes, because typically mind. Yeah, typically mind likes to just stay without doing the investigation. It's just happy with doing nothing or just being lethargic. But here it is necessary to arouse that ability by our initiation.
Okay.
So later, later probably when the mind recognizes that ability and that ability become one part of the practice, then it would be automatic. Till that, we need to give a little bit of effort to initiate that process.
Oh, I see. By initiating, it might go further.
Exactly. Yeah. More and more information will be available to you. Say today you recognize not only hardness, maybe softness available, there are movements available, say subtle smoothness available. So likewise, you recognize something today. Maybe when you continue tomorrow, some more details available. So likewise, it's a little kind of a progressive stage. You start recognizing more and more details, and later you can recognize, so what is happening to these little details? Now you are looking at it from a different angle. So that is kind of a different path is available, how we are to progress.
Today, Bhante, when I sat, I found it was like shunya. I mean, nothing is happening. So I don't know. That's why I thought of asking you, is it I have reached somewhere where it's, you know, this, what you call the sunyata?
How long are you practicing?
Well, I have been practicing for a long time, but it gets stuck. But now I'm regularly practicing.
Right.
And most, because I want to get somewhere.
Right. So basically, I mean, sunyata, the emptiness, basically is some outcome that we have to come across after going through a fair amount of vipassana, where you do a considerable amount of investigation. And as a result of that, you understand the non-self characteristics, that there is no essence in all these different formations. It's something that has to come with that wisdom. It is not that simply the mind become sort of stuck at some place. That is not the emptiness.
Yeah, at once, sometimes I think it as it's anicca. Anityanupassana, viraganupassana, nirodhanupassana, patinisaggo, and let go. And like that I practice because from the theory part, I have extracted that. And I try to initiate my practice.
No, actually, if it happens naturally, that is good. So basically, say, as we do the investigation, so if these phenomena have to show their impermanent nature. It is not that we are telling anicchang, anicchang. Rather, these phenomena have to behave in a way so that we understand their impermanent nature. So that is the kind of inner understanding or insight we are having, because we see in front of our eyes how vulnerable they are, how intransient they are, how inconstant they are. So likewise, how vulnerable, so seeing their inconstant nature, inner insight is developing. So that is what we say as a knowledge of insight knowledge. And Patinisandhanupassana, go ahead.
I'm not, I shouldn't be practicing theory. Is that what you are saying? Yeah. Not practicing theory, but it should come within.
Exactly.
So that I should, Yeah.
So that's why, I mean, when you are able to establish mindfulness and you are able to recognize things clearly, allow them to little propagate that, say while walking also. So what are the other qualities available? What are the other sensations available? You give that little curiosity to the mind so those phenomena are evident to you. It is not that we are trying to impose them. Rather, those phenomena have to be evident by themselves so that we are maintaining a very clear comprehension within our mind. So the different phenomena are appearing in that passage. And then we understand how they behave, so that the understanding develops.
So that I will experience those things in my own actions within myself.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. Teruvan Sannai.
Yeah. Teruvan Sannai.
So I think we don't have anyone raised hand at the moment. So I think we've gone a little over time as well. So we can end the program for today. So to end the program, I would first like to thank Bhante for his valuable time, even with the busy schedule at the monastery, to all the supporters of this program, both seen and unseen, and to the participants for joining today to practice and share their questions. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Teruvan Sannai, sadhu.
Teruvan Sannai.
Teruvan Sannai. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.